We're chatting art, transport, communications and history. That's a C-A-T-C-H. I call it the Catchcast. And we're hoping to get you as fascinated by our geeky subjects as myself and the wonderful guests. In this edition, we are shrinking down in size. We hear what the fascination is with building things at scale, how you can take part right here on the island, and how you can see this pastime for yourself. Today we're joined by model railway enthusiast Paul Bradley. Welcome to the Catchcast, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for being on the show, Paul. We want to know all about your really fascinating hobby, but can we start by taking you back a bit and ask how you got interested in railways and transport?
Well, I've been thinking about this, and it's probably not easy to pin down. It certainly wasn't hereditary, because my family had no real interest or connection with it at all. Apart from a very long time ago, I wouldn't really like to say how far, my grandfather used to take me to the edge of the railway line to watch steam trains going through. Mm-hmm. And the only other recollection that I have is that one day my parents took me to a local station and said that we were going to an exotic destination, Slough. But the difference was that we were going on a steam train, and my father said, remember this, it's probably the last time you will. So that sort of dates it back a bit. I had a model railway set, but we'll probably talk about that a bit later. That was given to me at Christmas, but I'm not really sure. I suppose it sowed the seeds in the back of my mind. A bit later on, I lived in London originally, and one of the pastimes was to join a friend of mine, and we used to go on what was called a Red Rover, or a Twin Rover. The Red Rover gave you free transport all day on London buses.
I remember them.
And to be honest with you, it was probably frightening now, because I used to be unleashed from our local bus stop and not return until late at night. And we're talking about someone who was sort of 12 years old. But what it did was got me obviously interested in buses, but it also helped with my knowledge of London, because we used to go to all sorts of exotic places like the Woolwich Ferry. So it was a real eye-opener. And the Twin Rover meant that you could use it on the underground as well. So didn't see a lot out the windows, I must admit. But we did get to places, you know, like High Barnet and Morden, all these places that you'd heard about and told to avoid, but never actually been to.
They were brilliant, weren't they, the Rovers? I grew up in London myself, and I mean, you could just go off and your parents would have a break from you and nobody seemed to worry.
That was why they weren't worried. That's why they were very quick on the marmalade sandwich and a can of Coke.
Off you go, Paul.
Yeah, bye.
Now, I understand one of your first jobs was working for the London Underground.
My only job.
Right.
I joined from school, and in those days it was London Transport, and they were responsible for buses and trains. In fact, when I joined, when I opened the drawer of the desk I had, rubber stamps were immense in those days. You had a rubber stamp for everything. And one of the rubber stamps in my drawer said trolley buses.
So wow.
It was going back that far. But yes, so I started off as what was called a supplies trainee. Now, what that means in English is that it covered all the buying for the buses and trains and the stores as well. So that's how I started. That was in 1973. And I retired relatively recently from the same job. Well, I say the same job. I still didn't have a trolley bus stamp, but I was certainly involved in the supplies and stores and purchasing right up until the end, albeit at a higher level.
Wow, there you go. Working for London Transport your whole life. That lovely privilege pass that you get with it.
Well, I have to say that helped, because I didn't have to buy a Red Rover anymore. The first weekend that I had it, I went all the way to Amersham just to see what it was like. But yeah, I mean, that was obviously a perk, and still is, because I've still got one. But yeah, it wasn't the only reason. You can't join an organisation just for the perks. You've got to be sort of invested and enjoy in what you're doing. And
absolutely.
I certainly did.
Absolutely. And when did you move to the island, Paul?
I moved in 2010 when I retired from Transport for London, as it's now called. And we have a daughter who lives over here. and she lives at East Cowes, and she came over because she married a teacher who was, well, still is teaching on the island.
Right.
So we used to come over quite a lot, and when I retired, I must admit, my wife and I were thinking, well, where should we go? The island was thought about, but discounted because of the little bit of water between the two. But in the end, we ended up here, and the rest is history.
Well, we're glad you did, because we want to talk about the society you're involved in a little while. But I'm just wondering, harking back to those early days, when you had a bit of an inkling that you might like to drive or build your own little trains.
Well, it came quite soon. I suppose, as I said just now, the seeds of transport and things. And I thought it would be quite good to have a model railway. I've always been practical. I'm sure you'll relate to this as well. But Airfix kits were a big part of a young lad's, well, and girl's life at that time. And I just liked creating things. And I think the railway came about out of creating things rather than just running things around. So to me, and I think we'll probably cover that a bit later, the scenery and the design, etc., was just as important as running the trains.
Did your family have anything to say when you came up with this idea of filling the house with model trains?
Well, they didn't, because I'd left home.
Ah.
It was by the time I left home, when I had some space of my own. Well, I suppose my family, my wife Norma, who's been very supportive through everything, and I think she was just glad to get me out from under her feet. And at that time, we had a spare room, so it was ideal to put in a railway, which was under pressure once we had our first child.
Paul, can you give us a little bit of a brief outline of the different types of model layout that are available, please?
Right. Well, like everything these days, they're all in code. Now, we've talked already about N-gauge, and I think we're going to discuss that a bit later. Now, what that means, the N actually stands for 9mm gauge, so N for 9. I didn't know that until I looked it up quite recently. But what it means in reality is that for every real foot, it's 2mm. So if you think of something that is a foot long, in N gauge, it's only 2mm long. So it's quite small. But there are other gauges as well. Now, the original gauges were 0, 1 and 2. This goes back to the 1930s. So the only one that's still relevant now is O gauge. And for every foot, that's a quarter of an inch. So we're talking about much bigger. Now, you'll notice I said inches. I'm sorry to confuse everybody who lives in the world these days, because we've obviously gone metric. But there is a bigger one than O gauge, and that's still around, and it's called G gauge. G stands for garden, and that's 45mm to the foot. So we're talking about a lot bigger now. As we come down, I think the gauge that everybody is familiar with, or should be, is OO gauge, and that is 4mm. I'm sorry to be a little bit boring on the figures. I hope everyone's writing this down. OO is quite often, there's a slash and it says HO. So why is it OO and HO? Well, HO is a different gauge and it's more common on the continent. It's a continental gauge. Remember, OO was 4mm. Well, HO is 3.5. So there's a very slight difference.
Mm.
But the purists are very keen on it. When I say that, I'm keen on the difference between the two. Now, there's an interloper, and funnily enough, this is where I started, because that layout that I got when I was younger was TT gauge. Now, TT is 3mm, so we're talking about fractions of millimetres here, but it does make a difference.
Mm.
And then we get to N, which I mentioned just now. So can we get any smaller? Well, there's something called 009, and that is N gauge, but it's for narrow gauge railways. So it's almost like if you had a figure that was 00 gauge, 009, it would run on narrow track, like a narrow gauge. So that'd be 009. So are we going to get any lower, as mm-hmm. they say? Z gauge, ooh, which is 1.4. So we're getting really small now. And that's mainly a continental one, but it's quite popular in this country as well. And you would have thought, well, that's it. You can't get any smaller,
no,
can you?
No.
You can.
Oh.
T.
Oh.
T gauge, and that's 0.6mm per foot. So half a centimetre per foot.
Wow.
6mm. An engine in T gauge is about an inch long.
Goodness.
And it's got an engine in it. And in fact, there was a chap I spoke to at the weekend and he was actually putting people in the carriages.
Oh my goodness.
And he had to make sure you had the same number of people on each side, otherwise it came off. It was unbalanced. It's that small.
Wow, that is incredible that there are so many gauges available. You've nicely set the scene for us about the varying sizes that are on offer to railway modellers. So can you explain your choice of scale and give us an idea what it looks like, please, Paul?
I had TT originally, but I think that the crucial factor here for me was space. When we moved house, it was an opportunity to continue with the N-gauge. Now, the reason why I chose N-gauge at that time was the size. So if you're looking at an N-gauge engine, you're probably talking about 14 centimetres long, so about 6 inches long. And what it means is you can get so much into a smaller space or into any space. So, for example, if you had a layout in your a room at home and you were running 8-show, you'd probably be restricted, or OO, restricted because of the size of the coaches and the size of the locomotives as to how much you could actually get on the layout. And to me, I like to see a train that looks like a train, so it has more than just one carriage, and preferably quite a few, because that's what a real railway looks like, unless you live on the Isle of Wight, of course. To me, N-gauge was the ideal gauge to recreate the environment of a railway more realistically. If you wanted to have OO, you'd need an enormous space to put it in.
Mm.
And I talked about garden railway being the biggest. Well, obviously, that's out in your garden. So you put as long bit of track, longer train as you like, and run it through next door's fence if you wanted to. But you don't have those options necessarily with a normal house. Though I do know someone in the N-gauge Society who's converted his entire roof space, which is very long, because he lives in quite a big house, I think it's about 30 foot, from one end to the other. So you can imagine the sort of quantity of stuff and length of trains that you could get in there.
Wow. So effectively, basically, you can just fit a lot more railway track on your layout if you go to a smaller scale.
You can. And by the time you get down to 009, it's become silly. But the type of layout changes, I think, as you move down. Not everybody will want a very long N-gauge layout, but if you had like a tabletop that was 5 or 6 feet long, something like that, you could put in an enormous amount in N-gauge, a terrific amount in 009. By the time you get to Z, well, you could probably recreate, King's Cross Station. And by the time you get to T, you could probably have the whole of the East Coast Main Line.
Wow. Because I do remember reading somewhere once that if you wanted to recreate a big station like Waterloo in 00, you would need something the size of a tennis court or something crazy like that.
Yes, quite possibly. I mean, in N-gauge, it would still be a reasonable size.
Mm.
00 is very popular. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's probably the most popular gauge. It's also a good entry gauge for lots of people, mainly because children see it and their parents will have had that or been aware of it, and that's their favoured gauge. But there's an increasing number of people realising that they can't get as much into their layout with 00.
Mm.
And then one of the comments we get when they come and see N-gauge is, wow, look, I can get 8-coach trains running on this in the same space.
Mm.
The thing about model railways is it's personal. You just do whatever you want with it. And this would be my advice to people with a model railway, is do what you want to do, not what others want to expect.
So nice.
If you want to run the Orient Express with the local train to Bognor, then do it. it doesn't matter. There are purists. I gather that the nickname for them is rivet counters, who will want to see, if you do a station, let's say Sandown, they'll want to see everything about Sandown Station. And not only that it's correct, but it's correct for the actual age that the trains are running in. So if you have a steam train running into Sandown Station, the station would look completely different to the one that we got now.
Mm.
For example, they had an enormous signal box, didn't they, that stuck out of one platform. Things like that. So very much purist. There's nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing wrong with anything you do in model railways.
Because it's your world, you're building.
It's your world, it's your escapism, and it's what you like. Some people prefer to get everything absolutely right, every little flower in the flower beds, in the right place, you know. To me, that takes away, this is just a personal view, I just like to enjoy what I do and what I run. One thing I would say is that my personal preference is that everything will work. By that I mean, if you had a little crossing somewhere, I'd like to see a road either side of it, not just stuck in the middle of a field, because it gives it its purpose. Mm. Roads go somewhere, this sort of thing, but it doesn't have to be absolutely bang on. I would say most of the model railways that you see are imaginary.
So can you talk us through some of your own layouts then, please, Paul?
Yes, well, the main one is my N-gauge layout. That has evolved. When we moved to the island, it came with us, much to someone's disappointment, but it did. But I did some serious negotiations, and when we moved here, we got a new shed, which was specifically for the railway.
Ah.
I think it was accompanied with, now get down there and install a buzzer so that I can ring you when your tea's ready.
Excellent.
So it was sort of my little domain. And that's got an end gauge layout that's 16 feet long.
Ooh.
So that is quite a considerable length and keeps me very busy. Now, this is where the adaptability and way things change come in, because I added 4 feet to it when I moved to the island.
Mm.
So you can stick things onto the end or do whatever you like. If you don't like it, rip it up and do it again.
Mm.
So that was the main one. But because of my interest in transport, both professional and from an amusement point of view, I've also dabbled in other things. Now, with a garden railway, I did have one. It's okay, but it's high maintenance. If you put anything outside, you've got to think about how the thing's going to run. The traditional electric way is possible, but you've got to clean the rails every time you want to use it.
And make sure that you don't electrify next door's cat.
Yes, they wouldn't actually be killed, but they might smile a bit. The main problem, and this is a problem that the big railway has, is leaves.
Aha.
In the autumn. Or snow, things like that.
Mm.
But mine was mainly a summer thing, so I just laid it out on planks and put it out in the garden and ran it around. I've got a little bit of OO and HO, which is the standard one, or the OO one, and that just sort of runs around a shelf, really. And that's because there were a number of models that came out that I liked very much and thought, well, I'll get those. And then I thought, well, it's a shame them just sitting there not doing anything.
Mm.
So I've got a little bit of track just to run them on.
Mm.
Then there's the, obviously, that's the N. Now, there's a bit of 009, which was two trams. Now, I've always liked Blackpool, with the trams at Blackpool, up until when they changed them all, but all the old ones.
Mm.
And I built up a bit of a collection of models of them. So I thought, well, hang on a minute, why not try and motorise one? So that's what I did.
I see.
And I've now got 5 motorised, I think they were Corgi trams, that actually run about by putting motors into them. I went to Lisbon on a cruise last year, and they have loads of little trams flying about. And they did a model for tourists, and I thought, well, that's quite a good model. So I came back, and then I've recreated a small part of Lisbon tramway, just something a little bit different.
Nice.
You know, so that's how it emerges. I see things, I get this idea, and then I'm just inspired to make it either as a running model or just a static.
Paul, how would someone go about starting their own model railway layout?
Well, I would think the traditional way is to wait till Christmas and see what appears at the bottom of your bed. But I think you've got to start prompting. Generally, it will come from parents wanting to point their child in a certain direction, perhaps. But what will happen a lot, and we get this at exhibitions that we lay on, is that the parents will turn up with the children, and we're very hands-on. And we have a layout that's specifically for children to have a go, and a limited damage option. So the track is fairly simple. We don't mind if they go from 0 to 100 in 0.3 of a second, but their little faces light up and they say, well, I can have a go, you know, this sort of thing. It's almost as if there is a layout at home, but Dad's got 6 padlocks and things on the door to stop them getting in. So they have a chance to have a go. They're amazed at what they see. And I think it goes down to control. These children have got control over this. And once they've got used to running it very quickly, they realise that they're actually in control and they can make it slow and go faster and go wherever they want. And I think that sparks the germ. So Very few of them will actually say, I want a model railway, without some sort of catalyst. And that catalyst will come from seeing a friend's, or seeing an exhibition, or seeing something on television, just to grow that. I would recommend that you start small. I don't mean N gauge, I mean any gauge, but start small, in that it's something that you can put on the carpet, preferably on a board, because carpets and little electronics don't necessarily work too well, and just grow from there. My railway has been growing for, what now, 30, 40 years. And it's still not finished. And if someone says, oh, I've nearly finished it, they're not telling the truth. Because you never finish. In fact, probably most of the people who change and do different layouts have never finished the one before.
Yeah.
I personally started from something called Lone Star. And that was, they were static, made of metal, and they ran on metal track. And with your pocket money, you used to go and buy a bit more track or another truck. And it was just a push along. Actually, that ended up as N-gauge because it was the same size. But that's how I started with the interest. But how would you start with a railway? Start small. And the other reason is this is not a cheap hobby, not anymore. And the best thing to do is to start a little bit, see how it goes, and then let the enthusiasm lead to your wallet, because you don't want to spend a whole lot of stuff up front and then find you don't want it anymore.
Plus, also, I guess it's important to consider the space it's going to go in, which comes back to the whole choice of gauge, doesn't it?
Well, it's driven by space. I don't think there'll be too many who'll be starting with garden or O. Generally, they'll start with O or N. And I say that because the smaller ones are getting too small. Interesting point, actually, because there's a lot of people who did N who are now getting old. And they're finding that it's too small or difficult to handle. And they're going back to OO a bit. And I think that's why Hornby decided to do TT, which is sort of an interim, or reintroduce TT, because it's an interim between N and OO.
So how important is it to choose an era that you want to represent? You mentioned earlier on that some people don't do that. They just run whatever they fancy because they like the look of the engine or whatever. But is it useful to think about what you're trying to represent in terms of, I don't know, the steam era or electrics?
Well, I think it's what you grew up with, though I'm contrary to that. I grew up with a bit of steam, but I don't really remember them too much. So I was into the diesel type. But then, of course, being with London Underground, we don't have much steam and we didn't have much diesel. So that sort of led me into electric traction. So that's the way I went. It's not important at all. A major driver is, oh, I love that engine. And it doesn't matter what it is. If you like it, and the school goes back to the railway is yours, so do with what you want. Don't be led by others saying, oh, you should do this or do that. Or blimey, why aren't you doing the Great Western? It's down to you and what you like. And the very popular engines are these little shunter things because they're small, almost Thomas-like. It's a bit like Duck the Diesel, that sort of loco. And that's where the market has really recognised this, particularly Hornby. Other brands are available. But they've done the Thomas the Tank Engine ranges. So kids have seen Thomas the Tank Engine and they go to Haven Street or places like that when they have Thomas Days. And then they want to have one of their own that runs round. So they'll have a little Thomas on a circular track with perhaps Annie and Clarabelle, and that will be the start. But there will be people maybe who say, well, I'm just going to do Great Western or Great Northern, this sort of thing. But that will probably come later now. It's a long time ago. I mean, the railway's nationalised in, what, 1947? A lot of people are going straight to diesels and not doing steam at all, other than through the Thomas the Tank Engine entry route.
Right. Some of those beautiful layouts that we see at exhibitions or on TV or magazines, which are covered in trees and scenery, how much effort does all that take?
A lot. Can I just say a first thing on that is that if you're going to put a scenery onto a layout, track first.
Right.
Get the track down first and then do the scenery. Don't try and work the track around the scenery that you've put in. I know that's the way it happened in the real railway because they just drive it through a field, but it's not the way to do it with a model railway. Get your track down, get it all running, and then start adding the scenery. I think I mentioned just now that when I do that sort of thing, I want it to look right. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with putting down a cottage in the middle of the high street or putting a tree in the middle of a motorway if that's what you want to do. It's entirely up to you. Now, again, we're talking about potential costs with scenery, but you can be creative. People can make tunnels out of toilet roll centres. Mm-hmm. You know, anything you want. There's a lot of people who use crumpled up paper to make water. Making hills is easy. You just get some polystyrene blocks and that's your hill.
Right.
And if you want to paint it, do it. You can do whatever you like. But there are cheaper ways of doing anything. And if you look on the internet, there'll be plenty of guidance then on how to do it.
Because there are quite expensive kits and things available. I'm thinking of buildings and stuff like that, aren't there? They can be quite pricey and time-consuming as well to make scenery.
They can be, but as far as time-consuming, that's irrelevant because that's the enjoyment.
Right.
Because people like creating things. It's all about creating these imaginary worlds that you're doing. And the trains are just the final sort of icing on the cake. But you can create whatever you want.
Right.
Some buildings you can pay a lot for. Others, there are buildings now that are cardboard that you just download it. So you go onto the internet, and I think there's even some free ones where you go on and then you can just download the building, print it out at home, and then build it, stick it onto a cornflake packet, and there you go. So there's ways and means. It's like everything in life. There's different scales of complexity and different scales of cost.
And once you're underway, when's a good time to get involved with a society? Or should you actually do that to begin with?
Well, as I sort of run the island one, yeah, straight away. But it is important. We tend to find that the people who do join are fairly mature or who have an interest in things. Personally, we don't have many younger members at all. And I think there's all sorts of issues around joining any group with younger people. But we certainly have parents of younger children and they will join us. So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
We've got two young lads who are related to one of our members. They come to all our shows. They've got their own layouts and they're showing us what to do.
Wow.
Again, learning. It's creative. To me personally, anything that gets their noses out of an iPod or a mobile phone has got to have value on a wider basis.
Oh, I'm with you there, absolutely. Get people involved in a hobby and particularly get people involved in transport. That's what we need, more people interested in public transport. Fantastic.
Well, I think the two go together. I think there's very few people who just do trains and aren't interested in other things as well, buses or trams, etc.
Well, Paul, this has been absolutely fascinating. A whistle-stop tour of a time-consuming but oh so rewarding pastime of modelling railways. Our huge thanks to Paul Bradley of the Isle of Wight Engage Society for joining us on the Catchcast. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for inviting me.
You can find out more on the Society's website, ngsiow.uk, and they're often at local shows to display their wonderful layouts. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this as much as I have. I'm off to build a model railway layout. Next week's Catchcast is not to be missed. We're doing more chatting art, transport, communication history. Join us then.